Picture this. You're on your private pilot check ride. You're abeam the numbers on the downwind leg, 1,000 feet above the ground. The examiner looks over at you and says, "Let's say the engine just stopped. Make the runway. Everything you've built in training has to show up right now in order without a second chance." That's the PowerOff 180, and it is one of the most revealing maneuvers on the entire private pilot check ride because there is nowhere to hide. You can't add power to fix a bad approach. You can't extend the downwind and try again. You have one shot at a runway you've already started to drift away from, and the airplane will tell your examiner exactly how well you understand energy. "I'm Pattern. This is traffic pattern on radio hangar. Let's walk through this together, from the geometry of the pattern all the way to the flare, because if you truly understand what is happening during this maneuver, you stop guessing and you start flying with intention." Before we get into it, a quick shout out to our friends at AviationSoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the journey. First solo private pilot certificate, instrument rating commercial, real milestones deserve real recognition, and these coins are a great way to mark the moments that matter. AviationSoul.com. All right, let's start with what the airman certification standards actually require, because a lot of students walk into the check ride with a fuzzy understanding of the tolerances, and that fuzziness costs them confidence when they need it most. The private pilot airman certification standards specify that on a power-off accuracy approach and landing, you must touch down within 200 feet beyond your designated landing point, not 1,000 feet, not wherever you happen to stop floating. 200 feet beyond the spot you picked on centerline without excessive deviation from the approach path, and without, as the standard says, creating a hazardous situation. 200 feet is not a lot of runway, and here is the thing about that number. It is not 200 feet from the runway threshold. It is 200 feet from the point you chose. If you chose a spot halfway down the runway and you land 300 feet past it, you're outside tolerance, even if the runway is 4,000 feet long and you have plenty of pavement. So the first lesson is this. Pick your spot deliberately. Make it visible. Make it a specific mark on the runway, a number, a stripe, a displaced threshold marker, whatever gives you a clear reference. Then commit to that spot as your target. Now, here is something I wish someone had explained to me clearly when I was a student. The aiming point and the touchdown point are not the same thing. Most students aim for where they want to land. So they pick the 1,000-foot markers, they stare at them all the way down final, and then they float 200 feet past them on the flare and wonder what happened. The aiming point is where your extended glide path would intersect the runway surface if you made no correction and didn't flare. It is a mathematical point. The touchdown point is where you actually want the wheels to settle, which happens after the flare bleeds off airspeed and lets the airplane settle. The distance between those two points depends on your threshold speed and how the airplane transitions through the flare. In a Cessna 172 at a proper approach speed, that float can cover anywhere from 100 to 200 feet, which means if you want to land on the 1,000-foot markers, you should be aiming for a point about 100 to 150 feet before them. This is not complicated once you internalize it, but a lot of students never get this explained directly, so they keep overshooting their target and adjusting by instinct rather than technique. Let's walk through the full maneuver now. You're flying a normal traffic pattern. You come abeam your intended touchdown point on the downwind leg. That's your trigger. Carb heat on if you're flying a carbureted engine, then throttle to idle, pitch for best glide. In a standard Cessna 172, best glide is 68 knots at gross weight, slightly less if you're lighter. Know your airplane's number before the check ride. Not approximately, know it, establish the speed. Now you're a glider. The runway is behind you and below you, and the question is whether the geometry works out. Here's the mental picture I want you to hold. You are drawing an invisible triangle in the sky. The top of the triangle is your current position on the downwind. One corner of the base is the runway threshold. The other corner is wherever you turn final. Your job is to fly that triangle such that when you roll out on final, you have a reasonable glide path to the runway. Too much downwind extension, and you're too far out. Not enough, and you're too close and too high. The geometry is everything, and the geometry is determined by one thing above all others, when you turn base. The 45-degree rule is your guide. When your intended landing point is approximately 45 degrees behind the trailing edge of the wing, turn base. Some instructors use a clock reference off the wing. Some use the corner of the window. What matters is that you have a repeatable cue, not a guess. Students who wait too long before turning base end up fighting the approach from the outside in, always behind the energy curve, always trying to stretch the glide. Students who turn too early end up high and fast on final with a runway they can't quite reach with a normal glide. Both situations are manageable, but the recovery techniques are different. Let's talk about what to do when you're high on final, because that is the more common situation. You have three tools for losing energy without adding power. The first is flaps. Flaps increase drag and steepen the descent. But here's the important part. Add flaps incrementally, not all at once. If you dump full flaps early and you're still too high, you have used up your best energy reduction tool before you needed it most. Hold 10 degrees. Evaluate add more if the approach is still steep. The rule of thumb is simple. Add flaps when you're confident you can make the runway, not when you're hoping you can. The second tool is the forward slip. This is the one that students often underuse because it feels wrong. You're crossing the controls. Outside rudder, inside aileron. The airplane yaws into the relative wind and creates drag, steepening the descent without significantly increasing airspeed. It is an elegant solution to a high-energy approach, and it is one of the reasons the PowerOff 180 rewards pilots who have actually practiced slips rather than just read about them. The forward slip works beautifully on final when you have excess altitude. It also works on base, just make sure your airspeed does not decay below best glide while you're in the slip. Control the slip with rudder. Control the airspeed with pitch. Keep the two separate in your mind. The third tool is a gentle S-turn on base. You're not swinging wide and adding distance so much as winding out a little extra path. This works if you have the altitude and the spacing, but it is a coarser adjustment than a slip, and it is harder to calibrate. Use it when you're moderately high, not critically high. Now let's talk about the situation you do not want to find yourself in. Low on the approach. If you're low and slow, you cannot safely stretch the glide to a runway that's too far away. The temptation to pull back and try to coast the last quarter mile is real, and it is dangerous. The airplane will tell you it is stalling before it tells you it is going to land safely. Do not listen to the stall warning horn as a sign that you're almost there. Listen to it as a sign that you need to land on what's in front of you. On a check ride, your examiner will not set you up to fail. They are not going to have you pull power in a position that makes the runway geometrically impossible to reach with proper technique, but they will watch to see if you fly best glide or if you let the speed bleed. They will watch to see if you're flying the approach or reacting to it. And if you're low and you add back pressure instead of accepting the landing zone in front of you, that is a significant safety concern. The examiner is looking for a pilot who understands the difference between a manageable situation and an unmanageable one. Let me go through the most common mistakes I see, because knowing what goes wrong is half of knowing what to do right. The first mistake, not establishing best glide immediately. The moment you pull power, your job is speed. Every second you spend surprised by the situation is altitude you're not getting back. Reach for best glide the same way you would reach for it in an actual engine failure, because this is practice for exactly that. The second mistake, abandoning the traffic pattern mentally. Some students hear engine failure and immediately try to point the nose at the runway from wherever they are. The PowerOff 180 is still a traffic pattern. It has a downwind, a base, and a final. The pattern geometry exists for a reason, and it gives you the visual cues you need to manage energy. If you skip to improvising, you lose the structure that makes the maneuver flyable. The third mistake, using too much bank in the turn to base or final. Students who feel behind the glide path often try to make up distance by banking steeply. A 45-degree bank in a Cessna at 68 knots increases your stall speed and significantly increases your sink rate. You will arrive at the bottom of that, turn lower and slower than you intended. Keep your turns coordinated and your bank moderate. 20 to 30 degrees is appropriate. Save the steeper turns for when you have altitude to spare. The fourth mistake, crossing the threshold too fast. Carrying extra speed because you were uncertain about the approach is one of the most common ways to blow the touchdown point. A Cessna 172 that crosses the fence at 80 knots instead of 65 is going to float a meaningful distance before the wheels touch. You might fly through your 200-foot tolerance without even realizing it. Manage your speed all the way to the threshold. The fifth mistake. Inconsistent flare. Without power to cushion the transition, the flare has to be timed well and executed smoothly. Too high, and you stall above the runway and drop in. Too flat, and you land nose heavy and hard. The technique is the same as a normal landing, just without the option to add a little throttle if the timing is off. Which is exactly why practicing power-off approaches separately from normal landings builds the muscle memory you need. Here's how to actually get good at this. Go fly it 10 times in a session. Not in 10 different sessions, 10 times in one session. Not full stop landings necessarily, because that takes time. Work with your instructor to do pattern approaches to idle at the key point, evaluating your path, and then either landing or going around based on what you learn. Do it in calm winds and do it with a crosswind. Do it in the morning when the air is smooth and in the afternoon when thermals might be bouncing you around. Do it from slightly different downwind positions so you build the instinct to adjust, not just the memory of one perfect setup. The examiner on your check ride has seen this maneuver hundreds of times. What they are looking for is not perfection. They are looking for deliberateness. They want to see that you knew where you were going, that your airspeed was controlled, that your turns were coordinated, that you used the tools available to you, and that you landed in the right area without drama. A smooth, well-managed approach that lands 50 feet past the designated point is a much better demonstration than a white-knuckle save that squeaks in at 199 feet. Fly the approach, trust the geometry. Land where you planned. One last thing worth saying, the PowerOff 180 is also emergency preparation. Every time you practice it, you're building the instinct to immediately establish best glide, to identify a landing area, and to manage energy to a touchdown. If you ever have an actual engine failure on downwind, you will want that instinct to be automatic. The check ride requirement exists for good reasons. The Airman Certification Standards for the Private Pilot Certificate are a free download from the FAA's website. Read the specific task for power-off accuracy approaches before your next session. Know the tolerances. Know the ACS language. Sources today include the FAA's Airman Certification Standards and the Pilot's Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge. Both are free at faa.gov. More at radiohangar.com. I'm Pattern. See you next time.